This is Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. Stealth mode is over for Normal's electric vehicle maker, Rivian. Rivian moved into the former Mitsubishi Motors plant last year, but didn't say much else. In the last 2 months, though, the EV startup has opened up the spigot of news about its first two vehicles. Rivian founder and CEO RJ Scaringe spoke to GLT's Ryan Denham this week after stepping off the stage at the Designing the Future Summit in Michigan. He spoke about Rivian's role in the future of mobility and also had a little show and tell.
More deeply, we got into a discussion around our vehicle platform and our skateboard architecture, and we showed some images of what that skateboard architecture looks like and showed some of the elegance of how we've laid out the packaging, and then we also showed a bit more detail around our battery system.
Why do you call it a skateboard architecture?
We're calling it a skateboard simply because it looks like a skateboard. So in the platform, it carries the battery in the middle, the drivetrain in the front and the rear, driving the front and rear axles, and all of your braking and suspension and cooling systems are all carried in this very thin layer that when there's no body on the vehicle, it actually looks a lot like a skateboard.
And our understanding is that your first two vehicles are going to be sharing up to 90% of their materials, including that skateboard. What are some of the upsides to that level of shared content between vehicles?
I think as we start to think about, from an operations point of view, minimizing the amount of complexity between different variants, it provides us obviously cost savings, but also from a customer point of view, it allows us at a given price point to embed the vehicle with very high levels of content and technology because the cost levels are so optimized around a single architecture.
Well, obviously you're speaking today in Michigan, and you were recently announced to be coming to Normal to speak at an EDC community leaders event here in the fall. We've seen a bunch of behind-the-scenes interviews that you've done recently, and you hosted some of our Bloomington Normal folks up in Michigan at a engineering facility.
We did, yeah.
So, you know, yeah. Why was now the time to make that shift in public relations and communications strategy? It seems pretty deliberate.
Yeah, it's a good question. As a strategy, we had been pursuing, you know, extreme stealth, if you will, and not hype stealth, where we were trying to be, you know, look like we were being quiet, but actually being very loud. Actually, just very quiet, where we said very little. We didn't have signs in front of our buildings. In fact, most of our buildings still don't have signs in front of them by design. But we're just starting the process now of emerging, where we'll start to tell a lot more of our story. And really, the reason for that wasn't to be secretive so much as it was we wanted to wait until we had really advanced from a development point of view to a significant degree, so that what we were talking about and what we would then shortly thereafter be showing demonstrated that this is very real. And, you know, there's a lot of noise in the system and there's a lot of loud discussions from lots of new entrants coming in. We didn't want to get caught in that noise. We want to let, in many ways, our actions speak rather than our words. So we held off talking for quite some time, and I think many people didn't understand why we were being so quiet. But we've recently just begun the process and starting to talk more publicly about what we're doing. And that's all leading up to our launch, where we're showing our first two products in November at the LA Auto Show.
Why did you choose that venue for your launch?
It's a nice venue in that it's close to a core market for us. So we have, you know, for us, the West Coast and specifically Southern California is a very important market. It's also just a very nice event, and there's a host of other events around that event that we thought fit what we were doing quite well.
And are you going to be showing off both vehicles or just the first one? What are your plans?
So we're going to show both our launch vehicle, which is a reimagined pickup, followed by our second vehicle, which is a seven-passenger SUV at the LA Auto Show.
And do these vehicles have names yet?
No, we haven't named them. They have internal code names that a few of the folks we've talked to have actually published, but those aren't actually the names of the vehicles. Those are just our internal code names.
Gotcha.
But we haven't released the actual names yet.
Yeah, the code names are the A1T, A1C that we've seen before?
Exactly. Yeah, that's our internal naming convention for platform and product code names.
Yeah, and so as you've been talking to all these, you know, tech journalists who've come to see you and wanted to hear more about Rivian, it seems like some of them have been kind of taken aback by different things. You know, like some of them seem very impressed by how fast the vehicles will be. Be it the 0 to 60 in 2.8 seconds. Others are more enamored maybe by the possible alternative use in putting batteries in other types of machinery and vehicles that are beyond passenger vehicles. So what have you, in your conversations with these journalists that you've been speaking to, what has been some of the things that they've glommed onto?
Yeah, it's a good question. I when we think about a company, it's really an orchestra of different instruments that are playing that ultimately result in the music of the company, the music of the brand. And, you know, different pieces are different instruments. So, you know, our vehicles will be very fast accelerating. They'll be very capable off-road. They'll have lots of storage volume. The battery systems within the vehicles are very energy dense. They have applications both in those vehicles, but also beyond the vehicles as well, and other, and other applications, industrial, agricultural type applications, storage applications. So what's interesting is depending on the sort of background of the journalist, you know, and depending on what type of media it is, they may focus on or ask questions around more specific instruments within the portfolio of things we're doing.
After November at LA Auto Show, what happens then? Like, what comes next after the world kind of gets a look at these vehicles?
So then we'll continually, as we approach production, we'll, and start a commercial, start sales, we'll start to show more and more features. So we won't be showing every feature in November. We'll be showing many features, but certainly not every feature. And we'll be revealing that over time, and then we'll also be showing the vehicles in more and more applications. You know, we'll show them off-road, we'll show them on-road, we'll show them in different domains, different climates, and we'll start the order-taking process almost immediately after the show, the pre-order process.
And, yeah, what is the sales process going to look like? Are we going to see a dealership network, or is it going to be primarily online? What's it going to look like?
So there will be a network of retail locations, and exactly how we're structuring that and the partners we're bringing in to enable that, we haven't announced. But there will be a physical location for placing orders on these, but of course, in parallel to the ability to do it digitally.
No, in the past few weeks, you guys have talked about your financing. In addition to the American arm of Sumitomo, you've got a couple hundred million from Standard Chartered, plus money from the Saudi conglomerate. Are there other big investors that are part of the family now too that are beyond the scope of those three?
We haven't announced any other shareholders beyond those three. There are other shareholders though in the company, but none that we've announced. And I think for us the important thing that we've been able to put together is this, the shareholders in the business are very committed and very, of course, excited, but also supportive of all the things we have in front of us in terms of launching our vehicles over the next 2 years.
Given the international nature of some of your financing, should we read into that Rivian's, ambitions are bigger than the EV market in the United States? I mean, how important are those international markets long term for you?
Certainly, the company is also going to be pursuing international markets, and China as well as Europe are important markets for us. We have plans to be in both of those regions very quickly after launching the U.S.
The amount of skepticism about Rivian and Bloomington Normal, just from what I've observed, has dropped considerably in the last couple of months. Now, the only thing I hear from skeptics these days is just, they look at financing, look at money, and they've heard about how much money it takes to get a new EV company off the ground, and they look at the big investments you've announced, and they wonder, like, is that going to be enough? Is that a question you've fielded before from community leaders or journalists or other folks?
As I said, our existing shareholders are committed and able to continue backing the business. But we're also in the process of we'll be bringing in other partners and shareholders over time, as any growing business should. Beginning of the process, when we first selected Normal, the folks that did the diligence on us from the local community as well as at the state level were able to see those details, and the general public were not able to see how well financed we were and how well backed we were. And of course, they commented to say, trust us, the company is very well financed. But because we had been so quiet, it made it hard for many people to see and understand. And I think what's helped a lot in the past several months is people recognize the scale of our operation and the visit, coming out to see and seeing that there's, hundreds of people working on this. The company currently has about 400 people. And seeing the scale of those operations, it's clearly a company that's very serious and very committed to launch these products.
So what kind of potential is there for Rivian's battery cells to be used in other companies, outside of the auto industry? Tractors, flatbeds, forklifts, that kind of thing? Is that kind of a long-term part of the plan?
Yeah, so we see a big opportunity for the battery system to be applied in a variety of different applications well beyond vehicles, and we're actively working on a number of those now.
And are there other industries where, you know, that rely on vehicles where you see sort of a natural fit for partnerships, like package delivery, moving companies, ride-sharing companies, I mean, those types of partnerships?
Yeah, for what we call our skateboard architecture, we see a significant opportunity there as well. And I think that's part of what gets so exciting is beyond our own brand and our own set of products, the opportunity to take our platform, the opportunity to take our battery technology into these other domains is really, really exciting.
And before I cut you loose here, so how often are you getting down to Normal and visiting the plant?
I'm there at least every month, sometimes more often. And we have a growing team there. So we have around, probably getting close to 60 people there, somewhere between 50 and 60 people at the plant, many of which, as you can imagine, worked at the plant previously. So it's been great bringing back some of that great, really strong talent. And we've got a very strong leadership team in place to help drive that process as well at the plant.
Rivian founder and CEO RJ Scaringe talking with GLT's Ryan Denham after speaking at the Designing the Future Summit in Traverse City, Michigan. You're listening to Sound Ideas.